Now, Podcast One brings you Spike's Car Radio, a downloadable cars and coffee hosted by writer, comedian, and automotive enthusiast Spike Ferriston. Now, here's Spike.
All right, here we are, Spike's Car Radio. Got a great show for you today. A very car-y show today. If you're tired of the comedy shows, which I'm not, by the way, I'm way into the comedy shows. We have a car show for you. I'm also way into the car shows. Today, my guest is TV host, producer, automotive journalist, the Shrek of the automotive world.
Is that a compliment?
Matt Farah, ladies and gentlemen. And I've also got my co-host, the real Zuckerman, back. Zuckerman, good to see you back in the studio, my friend.
Good morning, Mr. Ferriston.
You've got to go to work, I know.
I know,
you
make the money.
You just said right before, yeah, get me out of here. I got to go make the money. Well, you're here for a little while because we're... You know, I wanted to have you on, Matt. Matt, you know, I don't think I've had you both here together.
I haven't. All I hear about, your little show over here is how good Zuckerman is.
Zuckerman's great, and now you're here.
And
but
I'm
now,
like the filler for when Zuckerman has to work, usually.
Yeah, so not filler. We all hang out. We talk cars. But I wanted to have you on because Drive is in its second season. Fourth season, that's right.
First
you
Shrek
I should have prepped you a little bit better.
Well, that's why you're here. I want to hear all about it. So you guys are launching your fourth season right now
on NBC Sports Thursday nights at 9 and 9:30.
There you go. Are you one show in, two shows in?
We're actually four shows in because they're doing it 9 and 9:30, and those are different shows. They're not right. Double airing the same show. So
tell everybody about Drive in case they don't know what it is.
It's like Top Gear but with less money. Basically.
And who are the three hosts besides
there's
yourself?
Four. It's me, Chris Harris, who is on Top Gear,
right.
Mike Spinelli, who is a very talented writer.
And did I see Alex Roy in there?
Alex Roy is a host.
Has he been a host for all four seasons?
No. He popped in occasionally in the first two, and he had more involvement with this third season.
Right.
And Alex has made himself, you know, he was like the cannonball guy.
Right.
And he still is kind of the cannonball guy. I had an experience with like the Cannonballers Club, you know, in New York for Alex's video, like, release party I was just at. But he's now kind of an expert in electric cars and autonomous cars.
Yeah,
and
no, so, I know. I see him write about that a lot. But
yeah.
but now on Drive, what is the premise of this Top Gear? What makes it different than Top Gear?
Well, it's sort of at its heart, it's a magazine-style car show,
mm-hmm.
right? That's sort of what the goal is to keep that magazine-style car show that guys like us enjoy, to keep that alive. So it's definitely there are new cars and old cars, and, you know, some segments are individual hosts, some segments are group kind of things. We did a 24-hour race at VIR. We went to Iceland, like, and
wow.
Spinelli and Chris
Harris.
Well,
that's not cheap.
It is the way we do it. I assure you.
What do you mean?
If you took your family to Iceland,
yes,
it would cost more than the budget of this episode. I'm not. You laugh.
Well,
explain
the bit
so
that
the
you
bit,
were doing.
Here's the bit. Okay. Iceland is an hour long special. Our shows are there's eight episodes this season. Six are half hour. Two are an hour. So
okay.
Iceland is an hour, and we, you know, Iceland is an island in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. And we start in Reykjavik on the western side of the island. And the question is, and I think, you know, you hypothesize or whatever. The question is, what is the best way to get to the other side? And Chris Harris and Mike Spinelli drove a Ford Raptor across the center of the island, you know, next to the volcanoes.
Right.
You know, where the crazy off-roader. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, they were on a trail. There's a trail that goes through the middle. There's a lot of trails, but there is a main trail that is very popular for locals. And so they took that trail from one side of the island to the other. And then there's a ring road that goes, you know, it's like the one that goes around the whole island. And they have built this ring road specifically to make Iceland a road trip friendly country. And so the road goes right by all the good tourist stuff,
uh-huh.
and there's hotels.
What are the
and
tourist things in Iceland?
Oh, I mean, it's all, there's like nature, waterfalls, hikes. It's a very outdoorsy kind of place. The black mm-hmm. sand beaches, stuff like that. It's a very, like, you know.
I hear the people are striking there.
You know,
just beautiful men and women
too.
Walking. No,
it's not true. No. You're thinking. You're really thinking of
maybe it's just their
Norway, Sweden. Like
no,
the real...
it was Iceland because I remember the Seinfeld cast or Jerry or somebody NBC flew them. They said we'll fly you anywhere in the world. Every season they'd get the private jet, go anywhere in the world. And 1 year they went to Iceland, and they came back and they felt so less than.
Well, look,
because of these male and female goddesses, you didn't see it.
I mean, look, I'm not saying I didn't see the occasional pretty girl there, but I've been to Sweden, you know. I don't know if you've been to Sweden, Zucker.
Yeah, the Swedish girls.
The Swedish women, it's like, it's on some completely other level.
Okay, and well, let's get back to the car thing.
So anyway,
so the premise is he's bisecting the country, you're driving around the outside.
He goes through, I go around.
Right. Is it a race? Is it a competition to see who can finish first?
Of course
or?
It is.
It's not, it wasn't necessarily
What's
a
the
race.
Bit?
It wasn't a race. It was who did it better. What's the best way?
I see.
What is the best way to do this as a car enthusiast and a driver?
Okay.
If you're going to go to Iceland, what's the best way to see it? Across the middle or around the...
So when you're doing a show like this, so do you have a car in front of you with a camera in the back? Or you,
actually,
you're
at that time, no.
So you're just GoPro'd up, or
I brought one guy with me. I had a McLaren,
right?
So we had me and one cameraman.
You had a McLaren, which one?
570 GT, okay. Which is lovely. Mm-hmm. And we had all my clothes, all his clothes for 5 days, and then all the camera gear we need for 5 days in a McLaren.
So you guys are shooting your own show.
We're shooting our. We shot our own half of the show, and the entire rest of the film crew went with them to the off-road.
So what is NBC Sports contributing to this? I don't understand. If you guys
well,
just
we don't have much money, but the money we do have comes from them.
Okay, right.
I mean,
but you're your own cameraman, and are you editing the show together?
We make the entire NBC Sports show with 9 people,
right,
including the cast, which is 4.
And are you going into the edit room yourself and putting that together?
Not me personally, but 2 of the people who do edit our show are also cameramen on the show.
Is this JF Musial?
Yes,
this...
it is.
Yes,
yeah,
okay. I like it.
Yeah, it's Tangent Vector.
Yeah, it's
hard,
a good,
hard-working
good group.
Guys. Look, it's very... It doesn't look like a show that's as cheap as it is,
right?
Honestly. I
right.
mean, it's,
so as you're watching, you do have to keep
the money,
in mind.
The these... money in the show makes it to the screen.
Right. And we're talking, when we're making an episode of Grand Tour or Top Gear, we're talking $3 to $5 million an episode, right? What,
I would
are
cut
those?
That by... 100?
What do you mean?
like it's 1% of that?
Yeah.
It's 1%
right,
of the
right.
budget.
No,
yeah.
What I mean is, though, these other guys, they're
yes.
putting a lot of money on the screen.
Oh, they
I think
are.
You guys do a great job for that.
Yeah.
And it's fun.
I think
it's
you
like
get a lot more
than
way, 1%
get,
of that show.
How does
for 1%?
Chris Harris get to host that show? Isn't he on Top Gear in England?
Yeah. You know, here actually, people ask that a lot. Drive airs internationally on the BBC.
It does.
Yeah, when I went to vacation in South Africa, there were fans there that had seen Drive, and I was like, "How do you see Drive?" What? And they're like, "It's on the BBC here." And
wow.
I didn't know that. So there actually is some international synergy.
You would think that would be a reason for them not to put Chris Harris on again, but they're just cool. It sounds like the British
you know,
are just cooler about that stuff, anyways.
I don't know the specifics of his deal, but I do know that he does have to make Top Gear a priority, which can make scheduling a challenge.
Have they ever asked you to host one of these Top Gear shows? You seem like a natural for that stuff.
I don't think they can afford me.
What do you mean? Of course they could.
They could. I don't think they want to. No,
right.
I don't want to.
No, I know you're talking about Top Gear USA.
You and I.
That's a different. I don't mean Top Gear USA.
Top Gear?
Yeah, like a British Top Gear,
yeah,
like the real ones.
You know, that's like if they asked you to take over for Jerry, you know, after season 10 of Seinfeld.
Why would
you know?
They do that?
If it was still called Seinfeld in the same show, but then you were it.
So you're not a fan.
It's not that I'm not a fan. It's that I don't want to be in the shoes of the people that have to be in those shoes.
But isn't Chris Harris doing a good job?
I think he is, yes.
Who's the
I'm
other
not saying
guy?
He's not.
Matt LeBlanc?
Matt LeBlanc is doing
he's
a great
fantastic,
job, too.
Fantastic,
yeah. I'm not saying that they're not
the
doing a good job.
The goofy red-haired guy's
I'm just
gone.
Saying I don't want that kind of pressure.
You don't want that pressure?
I don't need the
what
pressure.
What do you want?
I want to make, like, the Matt Farah show. You know this. You know, we want to make...
Zuckerman,
you
would you watch the Matt Farah show?
Of course I would. I'm in the room with him right
well,
now.
Well, what is in the
you
Matt Farah show?
You and I spend our Saturdays sitting around drinking coffee at Bill's going, what can we make that's
what can
new?
We make? Well, you pitched me a very good idea the other day.
I want to make that show.
Yeah, and,
can
that,
we make
and,
that
and we have a little traction with that.
We
but
do?
That's
a fun little show.
Yeah, I think we're going to sell that show. But that's kind of a one-off thing.
I also, like,
but the Matt Farah show, what... What would the Matt Farah show be?
It would be the version of the Bourdain for Cars show.
Oh, right.
That people keep talking about making, but no one has ever been able to really nail it.
Well, I shot a version of that with Magnus.
With Magnus,
Walker,
I know, yeah.
In history.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's tough to pull off.
I know it is.
You could do it.
And if anyone can do that format, it is 100% me.
You have to be a guy who can ask questions. You have to be a journalist, really, and you have to know how to kind of write
that
to make it interesting.
I can be that exact person. I have no problem. You know, we sit down at the table and I ask those types of questions. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with that. Where my weak point is getting that meal set up in the first place. You know what I mean? If I had a great producer that would help me where we had an idea and a producer that would make that conversation happen, period, I could nail the conversation once I was there.
What's nice, funny about this, Matt has not worked on a big show before. He doesn't understand that you would have
– that is a thing. Specialist.
You would sit down with a table full of people and four producers, and they would pitch you different segments.
Let me explain something
and
to
then
you,
talk,
homie.
And then you would
– We don't have a sound guy.
I know.
On Drive, our cameramen are also the audio people. That's the thing. So, I don't know what I would do.
Let's go back
a
little more in time. Where does Drive begin? How did you guys put this little consortium together?
It began with the YouTube channel Drive,
right?
Which was like a YouTube
premium. But how did
you
meet each other? How did you know each other?
Oh, I met JF and Mike Spinelli. I worked together in my first ever video job at Next New Networks in the show was called Garage 419. And I was brought in by a guy named Emil Rensing, who will be sentenced Friday, November 17th in federal court in New York. And I tell everybody we should go watch the sentencing.
Sentenced for?
Fraud.
Amyl nitrate.
I mean, a guy named Amyl. Who would have thought thought a guy named Amyl was a piece of shit?
What? You know. And so he ripped you off.
He ripped off some people.
Yeah.
Which he's now.
But
we don't have to say allegedly anymore because he pled guilty. So he did rip off some people.
Were there hot tears? There's always tears.
He's gonna
after
get
you.
That. He's gonna get the federal prison tear.
Yeah, the tattoo tear on there. But you met Harris and you met Spinelli.
So,
there.
No,
and you
I met JF and Mike Spinelli at this original company, and then I had brought in Tom Morningstar, who works on the show as well, and then they had gone and gotten Chris from the UK for YouTube work, and then NBC approached us initially about licensing our YouTube content. Season one of our show was basically our YouTube content with professional studio-grade intros and outros.
Wow.
And then season two was original content, season three was original content, and now the stories get bigger.
Right. And in the meantime, didn't they sell it to Time Life?
Sold the YouTube channel to Time Inc.,
But
they did not sell the television show.
Oh, they didn't.
So they sold the YouTube channel, which became The Drive.
Okay.
And I wrote for them for a minute. And then they kept the television show. And so JF and them at Tangent Vector, his company, they make the TV show.
Got it.
Yeah.
So
it's really complicated.
It sounds like it.
That's Hollywood, though, right?
You know, I've noticed because now
that's Hollywood.
Car Matchmaker is on NBC Sports.
Yeah.
Does your show ever air at the time it's supposed to air? It seems to get delayed
Red Bull. We've gotten bumped for sports stuff before. The hockey game goes into overtime and whatever.
Yeah, well, I'll kind of check in with it to see what it looks like, and then but I see Red Bull Racing once and a soccer game, and then Brian Vickers behind the desk talking about NASCAR and things about NASCAR I don't quite care about.
You know,
and everybody's like, "Well, where's your show?" And I'm like, "I don't know what's going on over there. I don't know how this thing works."
You know, I don't have cable.
Right,
at my
right.
house. So
yeah, most people don't.
For me, ignorance is bliss when it comes to the actual airing of the show. I'm sure.
Do you look at the shows after they're put together?
I watch the finished cut. I don't watch them on broadcast TV because I don't have broadcast TV. But they share the finished cuts with us.
So you don't get too concerned with how you look and how you sound or things you say?
I know I do. I watch a rough cut. They will send out rough cuts and they will ask for notes, and I would say I don't have edits in my contract or anything, but we all want the show to be good.
Right.
And so there's one instance I've definitely had them, because ultimately if I do a car review or if I'm talking about the car, in my smoke and tire videos, in my one takes, it all stays in. So there's, you know, the audience will hear what they want to hear, but they will hear everything. In the television show, as I'm sure you know, the person really giving the car review is your editor.
Right, right.
And so if you don't have the, and the editor may or may not be a car person, they may or may not know what you're really trying to convey. They may not know that this point is more important than that mm-hmm. point. And so if you have to, so anyway, I watch those cuts in order to make sure that that the overall impression of the review that the audience sees is what I'm trying to say about the car.
You know, I just thought of a good show. You and I were talking about one, Zuckerman. Have you heard this? This would be Spike and Matt's Stupid Car Flips.
Oh, yeah. This would be a fun show. Yeah,
and this is based on Matt's video that he made about his new daily driver. It was a 1990
Mercedes. It's an 01 Mercedes SL500. It's
01 Mercedes SL500. I don't know where you had it, if it was on Instagram or somewhere.
It's just on my YouTube channel.
It's on my feed somewhere. And I see, oh, hey, there's Matt Farah. And, oh, hey, he's in this Mercedes. And I start watching it, and it's just him driving through where? Culver?
Just driving in traffic.
Driving in traffic, talking about this car, this dumb car that I've never wanted. And by the end of the video, I want one of these cars.
I have sold one to him.
I respect about Matt is that he does mine a segment of cars that we would normally overlook. And when you get those cars, you satisfy the hunt and acquisition mm-hmm. urge. And two, you get to enjoy something fun. And if you're not in it deep, you're out of it.
Yeah, well, this is just
a mild investment.
Yes. This is just advertising. Advertising works.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about this all the time.
I can move my own market.
Well, we drive cars all the time, but then you know, Zuckerman, you and I will film each other and send each other the video right. and go, why does that look like more fun than I had when I was actually
That's
driving
That's like me
the car.
Watching you wearing that Yachtmaster 1 from Crown and Caliber. I'm going, yeah. You know, until this very moment, I've been like, I'm not that into the Yachtmaster 1.
Neither.
Now I'm like, damn, that is fire.
That's a fine watch.
I gotta tell Zuckerman, though, I'm in the club now.
You are.
I'm in the club. Now I can have breakfast with you guys.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is good news, ladies and gentlemen.
And not only are you in the club, you went in the club in a
big ballsy. Hold on. Will, drum roll. Put in a drum roll right there. Go ahead, Matt Farah.
Will's like panicking. He's like, drum roll?
People are hearing it right now. It's still going on. He's putting it in post. Go ahead, Matt Farah. Announce what you bought.
I bought an 87, two-owner, California its whole life, G50 Carrera sunroof coupe with a whale tail.
He bought a Porsche, ladies and gentlemen.
Red over red.
That is a heinous color. No,
the
it is not
awful.
A heinous color.
Give me 60 grand for it.
I am going to tell you that that is the way to go into Porsche. And what you're going to realize is that with that heinous color, a color that is never seen in all of the blacks, grays, and whites that you're going to encounter all day long, people are going to look at that car and they're going to go, oh, my God.
I'm painting it.
Don't paint it.
I hate it.
I'll tell you what, even for a month.
I call him the Porsche pimp.
I saw it on your Instagram feed.
He has a plan for it. He wants to turn it into a safari car or something.
He's a build guy, not like us.
But look, let's just welcome him into the Porsche group here.
Yes, you're right. Why do I have to start telling him what to do?
Right, but he had a really good point about this purple color. Say what you said to me, because I loved this observation. I think it's right on when it comes to purple Porsches.
So
people eater.
Two things. One is I got this car cheap, and I got it cheap because it sat there on Pelican parts.
Well, that's not the purple thing.
The purple thing is that everyone thinks that I got this car cheap because no one wanted it. All of a sudden, now that I have it, everyone thinks it is on me to be the savior of ugly purple Porsches. Like, all of a sudden, I have now a responsibility to save this ugly car.
No one else bought this car. It's been sitting there for a long time. And what his observation was, which I loved, which is all Porsche guys love purple cars, but they don't buy
Nobody
purple
buys
cars.
Them. No one wants
and I
them.
I bought it, and I can do whatever
and
I want with it.
Someone says to me, oh, you need to preserve the value of this. Oh, there's value in the car.
Yeah.
Great. Give me 20 more than I paid right now.
You buy a purple Porsche and keep it. Well, don't make me buy it.
Farah now owns that segment of the color deal.
So here's what I'm going
to
do.
Well, by the way, I said this to Graham Rahal because he wanted to get, what is it? Is it the aubergine, Zuckerman? Is it the aubergine color of the 73?
Yes.
And I said, really? He goes, what do you think of this? I go, I love looking at it, but I'm not going to ever buy it, you know, but because I'm that same way. I love looking at ultraviolet, the GT3 RS ultraviolet color. Beautiful. I love, but I'm not going to buy it.
On somebody else's car.
Yeah, on somebody else's car, because I don't want to hear everybody make grape ape jokes and everything else.
You know what, though? I'm glad he's in. I think he's going to catch the bug in a big way.
He's already had it.
I already have.
So what's your plan for it?
So I'm working with Lee Keen, racing driver.
Who is that?
Lee Keen is a GT racing driver.
Okay.
He won the Rolex GT Championship. When it was called that, it's now called IMSA Tudor.
He's won
the 12 Hours of Sebring in a Porsche. He's won a few big races in a Porsche. He's podiumed at Daytona a few times.
Wow.
He's a legit driver. His gig now is building these safari Porsches.
Wow.
Now, you guys
have seen a real gig?
Yeah, he's got a list.
Like mailman?
He's got a list.
Just take the deposits and run. Yeah. Easier than doing the work.
Right.
So says Amon Lake.
How long is his list?
He just finished number 6. I'm number 14.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So unlike the Luft auto cars, which you've seen, the white and the yellow that Joey Seeley and Pat Long and those guys are building, those cars are basically...
Wait, they're building Safari 911s too?
Yeah, did you see them at Luft de Gulf, the white one that Eli bought?
I thought that was just one.
They're now on number 2. They are building the second one.
How many Safari car 911s does the world need?
I don't know. We're talking about like 16 cars.
I already think it's saturated.
Porsche was saturated
after one.
Look, Porsches have been rallied throughout
their entire existence. Yeah,
entire existence.
I get it.
You are correct about that. But what does it turn out to be?
Who's driving that?
I think that living in Los Angeles is a lot like off-roading.
Yeah.
And I think the roads are bad. I have driven Lee's personal safari car.
Yeah.
I did a video on it for the show. This vehicle was one of the finest motoring experiences I've ever had. Period.
Really? Did you drive it on dirt road where it was meant to be driven?
I drove it on tarmac and I drove it on dirt road.
Right.
On tarmac, it rode well. You lose handling limit because you have off-road tires, but on a highway cruise and in some mild sweeping bends, it still feels like a 911 is supposed to be.
Yeah, no, it sounds cool.
It does.
If you live in Utah and you have a dirt road or out in the country, I totally get it. I'm just saying.
Are you aware of the amount of desert we have in this state?
Really?
You can drive 30 miles outside of town and have sick trails.
Wait, is the avocado a fruit or a vegetable, Zuckerman? Which is it?
You can have...
We went through this earlier, but I know. We don't live here for the desert.
What is the legume? I know.
I hear what you're saying.
So you'll go up to Gorman or somewhere
that. Yeah, and have fun. I'm going to drive it to Mammoth skiing,
that's fun.
Big Bear, stuff like that. I mean, look, I already have my Mustang, which is my Canyon, car. I don't need to have a Porsche that serves where I have to go, on this day, do I choose one of these two cars?
You're scratching your head, Zuckerman.
he cannot possibly understand.
No, I can't understand.
He's
going to
do the Porsche thing his way.
He's going to do it his way. But like anything else, I think that the Porsche experience makes you eventually do it their way. That's what happened to me.
That's
a very funny observation.
I started trying to do Porsche
my way. It's like a
homeowners
association,
It's
like one of those horrible country clubs. By your 70th birthday, you're the one telling people to tuck their shirts in, too.
Right. Mm-hmm. You get co-opted. You don't co-opt them. And remember, I started with the Green Goblin, and I had some other, like, R-groupy cars and other stuff. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, eventually, you say, maybe this factory of German engineers really knew what they were doing, and I should respect the original. That could happen.
You have a point. I mean, you have a point. I think.
Hey, by the way, Porsche, if you're listening, what about a new Safari?
I mean, that honestly, a brand new Safari 911, I think
that
would really
be pretty sweet.
Yeah, even if they just do it as a fun thing for the concept lawn at Pebble or something.
Yeah.
You know, the problem is they don't have a sense of humor. But
no, they would do that. Like you said, there's a rich history of these cars.
I understand that a lot of people see the Safari thing as a trend, and it's what's hot right now. When I'm jumping up, the fact of the matter is, not a lot of people have driven. As many of
you are laughing at the idea that safari cars are hot right now.
They are.
This is when there's been 14 made, right?
Taylor Swift is hot right now. Whatever. Safari cars is pretty low on that list.
In the world that we exist in.
In our little porch, safari cars are pretty hot.
I mean, I am one of the few people out there who's seen these things and have actually had real seat time in them.
Yes,
that's true.
That don't own them. I found the experience of driving it to be wonderful. And I would like to have that experience.
And so what are they going to do to your little purple pimpy mobile?
We are – the engine stays mostly stock. You don't need a lot of power for this stuff. Mm-hmm. So we do 964 cams. We do the chip. We do headers and exhaust. That's it. And service it. Okay. And we are putting air conditioning in it because I want to drive the thing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The suspension remains a torsion beam rear suspension. It's just longer travel. It's a 4-inch lift. Okay, and then you have the Fuchs wheels refinished with the RSR finish, the silver RSR finish, mm-hmm. or the grayish finish. BFG all-terrain tires, 16-inch mud flaps. Ducktail wing. I'm going to sell the whale tail. If you want a whale tail, I'll hook you up.
Who wants a purple whale tail?
Ducktail wing.
For my bedroom wall.
Fog light pod in the front. You tighten in the bumpers a little bit. You get rid of some of that accordion shit, you know. Little bash bar in the front, kind of mm-hmm. low profile with a skid plate, roof rack, and then you'd go wild in the interior. Fun fabrics, Pashas or something cool.
Zebras.
It's not. It's really not over the top.
No, it sounds cool. Great. And honestly,
is the final color going to be?
The final color is going to be paint code 329, which has had a few different names over the years. It's been called Oxford Blue, Dalmatian Blue.
Nice.
You see?
Yeah.
Right. Dalmatian nice. Blue is all right. A
you
hot
got me now.
Color.
It's a beautiful color, beautiful blue.
Right. And here, my other argument against the Cassis Red, even if you like it as a color, it is not a good color for a rally car. It's a bad rally car color.
Dalmatian blue is great.
Dalmatian blue, if those of you out there look it up, it is a hot color. It's got this electricity to it.
Yeah.
Especially like, you know, when they painted it back in the day, some of the older cars. If you see a car that's freshly restored with Dalmatian blue, woo!
It pops.
Oh, it pops.
Okay, he sold me.
All right.
But I'm
make
easy.
Make us three.
I'll tell you what, when I get the cars, Uckerman, drive it for 10 minutes and you tell me. It's fun.
It is. I drove Eli's car.
Oh, you did?
I did drive Eli's car, and I loved the lean. I loved the travel.
Yeah, yeah.
It really was fun, despite all my shit talking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. All right. We'll be right back with more Matt Farah after this. When you're looking to buy a car, you want to make sure that you're getting real pricing on actual inventory. Unfortunately, a lot of times, this isn't the case. People configure cars online, only later to find out they're not available. This just happened to my brother. Well, with TrueCar, you get real pricing on actual inventory. This is not pricing offered by TrueCar, but pricing from an actual dealer. And not just any dealer, but a TrueCar certified dealer. This is a carefully curated network of dealers committed to transparency and offering you a competitive market price. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the car you want. Next, TrueCar will show you what other people in your area paid for the same car you're looking for. Now you know what a fair price is, so you can feel confident. And don't we all want to feel confident? Over 3 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. There are over 13,000 TrueCar Certified Dealers nationwide. You will work directly with a TrueCar Certified Dealer contact. TrueCar users are more likely to enjoy a fast buying process when they connect with TrueCar Certified Dealers. TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. And guess what? I'm not telling you what features and what states.
Hey, it's Jay Moore, and it is time, finally, for America's Lakers podcast. That's right, I'm going to be hosting America's Lakers podcast. My man Aaron Larsoul, an analytical genius, he's going to bring to the table what I can't every Wednesday. America's Lakers podcast exclusively at podcastone.com, the podcastone.com app, which I highly recommend. You can rate and review this podcast on all Apple products. And guess what we're not going to do? We're not going to bathe in the gossip and the gratuitous negativity that's been swallowing Los Angeles whole lately. Who did what? Who snitched? Who said what? How about truth? How about facts? How about statistics? How about rotations? What's Luke Walton thinking? Who's underperforming? Who's overachieving? Who's rewarded? Who's coming? Who's going? And what are we going to do with all that delightful, delicious cap space? America's Lakers podcast with me, Jay Moore, and my man, my brother, Aaron Larsoul, every Wednesday, podcastone.com.
You're listening to Spike's Car Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Spike's Car Radio here with the star of Drive on NBC Sports, Matt Farah, and of course, one of the most vile human beings and car collectors in the world, the real Zuckerman.
That is so funny.
Piece of shit.
That is so funny.
The homo habilis of the automotive.
The most vile human being in car collecting. That is so funny.
He's a good man. And he's a bad man at the same time. That's what we love about Zuckerman.
Every pancake has two sides. What do you want me to say?
All right. Well, folks, we're going to answer some questions in a minute. You sent me a lot. But I wanted to talk about this this new Porsche, this Carrera T that caught us off guard.
Grab that money. Porsche.
This is the new one. The T, of course, stands for touring. The new model is going to be the lightest 911. In the 911 range, weighing only
30 pounds.
3,142 pounds. The T takes its inspiration from the Carrera of the same name produced back in 1968, which they used to race these cars, Zuckerman. You know, and I just bought a T. You and I just bought a T.
They used to race a lot of cars, Spike.
Well, they would always pull the T's off the line and race those because of that likeness.
Now they have cup cars.
Yeah. Everybody, they don't do that anymore. Here, let me read some stats because everybody wants to know what to make of this. By the way, I'm liking everything I hear so far.
This is a flagrant cash grab.
This is marketing. Yes. All right.
Buy a Carrera. Save yourself.
Here's a little more of what it is. Zuckerman, you wanted to know. It's based on the Carrera Coupe, 370 horsepower, 339 foot-pounds of torque, 3-liter twin-turbo boxer six, good for 0-60 time, 4.3 seconds. Not bad. Optional PDK, but you'd get the manual, right? Top speed 180. Let's see.
All the things you just listed, can I just state for the record, are exactly the same as the base Carrera.
It doesn't have a T on it.
Well, yeah, it has fabric door pulls.
Oh, it's got the fabric
door pulls. And it's got fabric seats.
And it's got fabric seats.
And here's the deal.
Lightweight glass. Don't you love fabric door pulls? I mean, that is a Porsche.
Not when it costs extra money. And not if it doesn't have a 4-liter motor behind it.
And that's my point, which is in the olden days when they decontented a car, you paid less money for it.
Yeah.
This is a gimmick, as you said.
Which began with what? The RS America?
Is it 93? Yeah. So the sticker on it is
many shiesty
the
moves.
Sticker is $103,000. So is that more expensive? How much more expensive than a base Carrera
is
that?
I drove a base Carrera press car that was, let me tell you, glorious. $96,000, manual transmission, sport seats, sport exhaust, nothing else. And it was glorious.
Right.
To pay $110,000 more for...
Well, it's not $110,000
more. I'm sorry. To pay $10,000
more. $10,000
more. For what appears to be basically nothing.
For a badge.
Why wouldn't you just spend $10,000 more on an S? Why wouldn't you get a Carrera S and get power?
I'm not disagreeing with you, but I said this.
For me to get into a car in the morning, I'm just like putting my – if I were to go, all right, in my head, let me set aside the ceramics on this car and get the Carrera T instead. And I open that door in the morning of my Miami Blue Carrera T, and I see those door pulls. that to me, and the perceived lightness, even though I'm probably not going to feel it, it's 40 pounds. He's not a real Porsche guy, but you guys listening who are Porsche, you understand that I feel like now I just got a pretty nice little deal for this 911. Not GT3 pricing. It's something cheaper, and I'm going to have a nice little light 911. Go ahead, Zuckerman.
Porsche is going to be a mass producer of specialty cars. This is what I said.
That's very
recently, because they realized everybody now wants to be the special guy.
That's,
so they're going to give everybody something special.
Everyone has their own little version of special something.
And so this touring is a little bit special. And I'm going to give the guy respect. I'm not going to look down on him for having touring.
Well, look where else they popped that touring label on, the GT3, too.
Right.
So now this guy who can't afford it.
That's so funny. Everyone who bought a 911R, I just love that all of them.
Yes. It was a masterstroke on Porsche's behalf. They didn't fuck the guys who bought them. The brokers, the guys who traded on them, the speculators, and then the black market.
Yeah.
And they gave the purists a car like it. I mean, it was a total win. It's a masterful move.
And the tightrope they have to walk is not to make it too accessible. And that's why they have to keep slicing the pie ever so smaller. And are we going to reach a point? I think. Currently, there's 29 versions of the 911. Are we going to ever get?
Are we slicing the cheese too thin?
No. I once, back when Paul Walker was alive, and they had just shot Fast and the Furious 4, which we thought was hilarious that they had made four of these stupid movies.
Right.
He was well aware of how stupid they were when he was.
You should see the size of the producer's house in my neighborhood.
And he bet me that it would make it to 10, and I was like, no. Never. And he goes, if we make it to 10, I'll give you $100. I was like, all right. They're about to make nine. Will there ever be, you know, someone was, will there ever be a 500 horsepower naturally aspirated 911? Will there ever be 50 variants of the? They're going to make a safari cab, a safari Targa,
a safari touring.
They should. So Jerry had the best idea, the test mule package on a 911.
Where you just have the body cladding.
Body cladding or dazzle or whatever you want. You can have the different versions. But a safari version is another great idea.
Well, Mercedes is doing it, right? They sold the 6x6, and they said that we're going to make 100 of these. Lo and behold, they made 600.
Yeah.
Then the Jeep 4x4 square, the shorter one, which looks hilarious if you see them running around Beverly Hills.
Yep.
And they made five times the number of that. And now they're making this E-Class wagon that's lifted. Have you seen this thing?
No, I haven't seen that.
They took the portal axles that give you that crazy lift.
In an E-Class?
And they put it in an E-Class. And so now they have an E-Class lifted on... It's sick.
Somewhere in a third-rate nursing home, the guy that penned the AMC Eagle is telling his nurse, "I invented this. I invented this." They're like, "Yeah, shut up, old man."
And then Paul Hogan down in Australia is like, "The world's second sport utility wagon." You know,
what is the use of the jacked-up G wagon, though? I mean, I saw one in Beverly Hills.
G-Wagon?
Yeah,
I mean, they're spectacular for off-roading,
but. Yeah, but here I'm only seeing them in Beverly Hills.
Of course, and they're stupid here.
You know,
can I remind you, sir?
Yes,
that you drive a Porsche GT3 at nowhere near the fucking pace that car is capable of going.
Hallelujah!
I drive that car fast.
I'm gonna put Lee Keane in that car with you.
Wait, the GT3?
He'll show you what fast is.
Oh, no, no.
You drive a GT3 to breakfast. Don't tell me about what a car is not.
But I drive them on the track, too. I know what that car, what that GT3 RS can do on the track. I had it at Road Atlanta.
That guy parked in front of Hermes probably goes off-roading every weekend.
No, he was... Take a guess. Because it's so stereotypical L.A. Take a guess who was in the car.
What the job?
When you saw that car?
Yeah, whose car it was. What they did.
Who's actually buying
it? Who was buying the car? Who bought it? Who bought it?
I would say it's not going to be a rapper.
It was a rapper.
Was it a rapper?
Yes, it was a musician. That's the musician choice. It's not just rappers, by the way. It's musicians. That's what they're doing. They're driving around in this jacked up. Aren't those going to tip over? Aren't these guys going to tip over
why they don't? Mercedes has this hilarious fail-safe system where if the wheel is turned – I took a G-Wagon to a track day once. Yes, this is dumb. But I took a G63 to a track day at Willow Springs. And I learned that if the wheel is turned more than about 45 degrees either direction, a G-Wagon will give you about 10% of the available engine's horsepower.
Wow.
And then you could stand on the floorboard with that gas pedal and you'll get nothing until that wheel is straightened out again. And then like a switch. It's like, you know, you got the wheel turned, you brake, you turn in, right? You go to get back onto the power and you got nothing. And then as you straighten the wheel, switch. Full 500 horsepower.
Wow.
And then, those clever Germans.
The Germans, the Krauts.
That's why people don't roll G-Wagons.
Fantastic. All right, let's take some...
Who was driving it?
I don't know which guy. I was told by the paparazzi guy up front. I didn't bother to ask. But it was a beautiful, like, metallic brown color that I hadn't seen before. And I am intrigued by it. But there's also this, like... soft green color, this non-metallic green that Mercedes is making right now. That's beautiful.
Like, it's almost like an army green, right?
Yeah. It's almost like this leaf green 911T that I just bought.
That's what I didn't say. Congratulations. That's a nice car.
Thank you. Cool. Yeah, I'm in the process of sorting it. I put new tires on it. That made a huge difference.
Modern tires on old 911s make all the difference in the world.
It's got 14-inch wheels on it, and I could see you very instantly meet a roadblock with 14-inch wheel fukes. There's nothing except Michelin defenders, and that's what it was on there. But imagine just trying to run in rain boots.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like.
Did you buy new Michelin
defenders? No, I went to Pirelli, and they make the vintage tire now, CN36 Cinturados or whatever they're called.
It's a new rubber compound and a vintage look?
No, it's just the vintage look. Exactly. And it was it was like putting Nikes on for the first time and running. The car is just light as a feather. It's got a second gear synchro issue and a couple little paint issues, but it is such a winnow. And the color.
The color's nice.
Yeah, you can't drive color, but people are enjoying the color, but the feel, like the relaxation this car is delivering. Like when you're stressed out, Zuckerman, when you drive this car, I took it through the canyons. It's like you just had a Valium and a massage.
It is the color.
It's unreal.
It is the color of the mental ward.
It wasn't the color.
It really is. It's a soothing green color.
Yeah. But it's not the color you can't see. It's the tea, the lightness. I've never owned a 70T before.
What does a 70T come with compared to a regular 911? The lighter?
Well, I can tell you the difference between the 70S and the 70T is the front end. The 70S is really more of a race car, and the front end feels totally different. In this car, the T is so light. Zuckerman, I don't think you've ever felt anything like this.
I don't think you have a torsion bar on the front of the T, and on the S you probably did have a torsion bar.
It was on solid footing on the front wind, the bigger wheels too, and it's just
right.
But it's still that light springy 2.2-liter engine.
That's different.
It's
really,
just
even that revability,
and it's but you've got these little things like the seat in my 73T. That seat that we felt when we first sat down on this leaf green, it's the same feel. And you go,
Matt,
something's wrong here.
Some guy who leaned
but
to
it's
the
not.
Left on his fat
oh,
ass
yeah, yeah.
wore that
oh,
seat.
But
in.
It's fat not. Yeah. It's just
he
comfortable.
Likes it. Probably is going to send me to the chiropractor.
No, I have a very sensitive spine, and so if I get into a car like that, I a half an hour, and I'm in excruciating.
I've never heard anyone say that I have a sensitive spine. All
right,
let's get to some questions here. Michael Morgan, discussion on vintage Rolex. The only thing going on in vintage Rolex happened yesterday.
Paul Newman.
The Paul Newman Rolex went up and crossed the block.
You
I officially
it,
said $15 million to my friends. I was pretty close because it went for $15.5 all said and done, $17.752 million. What did you guys think of that? Is that
There's
watch
too many
worth
rich
that?
People.
Well,
it's just too many rich people.
These Phillips guys.
The person who bought that has so much money, they don't even
I know
care.
Who bought it. Yeah? I'm pretty sure I know who bought it. Rolex bought it.
That makes
That's
sense.
That's the word on the street is Rolex
really?
Bought it. We heard from a guy who's in touch with the Silicon Valley types who knew two people willing to go to 11. And I think they were bidding against Rolex, which you're never going to – you're not winning if you're bidding against Rolex.
I mean, who knows if it's true, but I read that – because didn't the bidding go from 1 to 10?
No. Yeah.
That's what I –
I downloaded the app, right?
Yeah.
So I could watch this. It was so exciting. And he said, let's open the bidding at 1 million. And someone yelled – $10 million, and it stopped the room. And the guy thought it was a mistake. And for 45 seconds, it was the hamburger, cheeseburger mumbling of the crowd. Like, what's happening? Was that real? I don't know. $10 million, and that's where it started. It was really exciting.
I saw that happen at Pebble once, where they opened the bidding at you know 500K or whatever, and the first bid was $7 million. Fuck.
No, it's a legitimate intimidation that I learned from David Gooding and Charlie the Auctioneer, that if you want something and you know the number you're willing to go to, try to shed everybody down.
Yeah, you'll weed out a
The problem is you're not shedding down Rolex.
Yeah. Because what you do there is you prevent a momentum from being built up.
And it happened.
Yeah.
And I saw it. It was
still
lovely.
But what I read was that Rolex threw down that 10 right away because they wanted to guarantee it went for over 10.
You think so?
I don't know.
Did you read that?
I read that. I don't know if I believe it.
That doesn't sound like something that they would do. That sounds like a Silicon Valley guy move.
I mean,
it's a little bullish.
It could be these Saudi guys. You know, I know people. Who wouldn't even consider that is a significant amount of money.
And they had London on the phone. They had people in the room. It was great. The whole thing was exciting. The real question is.
Does the rising tide lift all boats?
Where's the vintage Rolex market going? Where's it? We're all old guys who like watches.
Do
you wear a watch in there? The young kid looking at him shaking, eating his avocado toast. Nope, I've got my phone with the thing. Right.
And I said, does Will know who Paul Newman is? In 25 years.
Do you know who Paul
years,
Newman is? Yeah, he's an actor.
In 25 years. No, he makes salad dressing. That's what that guy knows out there. And that's the problem.
He also made some pet treats.
Yeah, 25 years, everyone says, Paul Newman? Like if I said Lionel Barrymore.
Yeah.
Like who gives a shit about Lionel Barrymore?
You can say that about cars too, but I don't know. I don't know.
I think we're beyond peak McQueen, and McQueen
I don't
seems
know about
be,
that either.
Well,
I disagree.
We certainly will be in 20 years.
Yeah.
People my age, and I'm a little younger, I'm a half a generation below you guys. People my age do not give a flying fuck about Steve McQueen, I assure you. Paul Walker is our Steve McQueen.
Right.
All right, let's go to some more questions
Paul Walker's skyline in 50 years may carry more value than maybe not a McQueen XKSS, but one of McQueen's like regular cars.
That is my dream car.
Joel McHale icon.
Paul Walker Skyline is your dream car? Mm-hmm. Yeah, see?
Number four.
Yeah.
Can we get one?
Can we get one?
Yes.
We can get Skylines.
I
got the hookup on Skylines.
I strongly disagree with that. All right, let's get in some more questions here.
You've driven one. They're awesome.
This guy doesn't want you to destroy the 87, Matt. But,
okay,
yeah.
Buy it for $60,000. So here's my other idea. All these Porsche people were such whiny little...
Everybody wants to know about this Paul Newman Daytona. All right, let's
I had an idea, Zuckerman. I thought maybe I would hold Cassis Red for ransom. I would do a Kickstarter... Yes. And if I got like $20,000 on the Kickstarter, I'd keep Cassis Red. Otherwise, I would do a live stream sandblasting.
I think you should get the money and get the car.
All right, here's
amyl nitrate.
Matt,
right there.
This is a question for you. Focus, gentlemen. Drive a sorted 5-speed 928. This is Wisco whips and watches.
I did.
I think your opinion would change.
Drove
one for one take and was pleasantly surprised.
It means that guy has one.
Oh, he's talking to us. He's saying.
Oh, do you guys my not like 928s?
He's saying our opinion would change, Zuckerman.
No, I like 928s.
What do you
nice.
Like about them? Change my opinion in a minute. Go ahead. Talk. Tell
First
me why.
First off, I do not believe a 928 is a replacement for a 911. If that's where you guys are, if that's your argument against, I drove one that was like an 87 S4 with like a nice exhaust on it. Well, clean car, right? Mm-hmm. Low mileage. I just thought it was a nice, cool tourer. It made a nice sound. It was smooth. It felt solid. It was comfortable. I mean. Is it a $65,000 or $70,000 driving experience? No, but it's probably
is it a viable collector car?
Could be. The good ones, I think, yeah.
And
yeah.
for that segment, for people who have $25,000, maybe.
Yeah, no, I think you probably get a lot more 928 for $25,000 than you get 911 for $25,000.
Oh, hell yeah. I've always liked the back end of that car.
I like the later ones. A lot of people like the early ones without the side mm-hmm. skirts and the stuff. I prefer the later ones, but I think the GTS, the 928 GTS
what a car,
kicks ass.
Huh?
That kicks
it's
ass,
a little, yeah.
yeah,
it's just a little underwhelming if you've driven a 911, I think. That's the only issue
yeah.
I have.
Yeah,
I mean,
no.
if you were starting there and before you had a 911, then I have no issues.
They're not
with that.
Particularly exciting, but they are lovely, like touring road trip kind
right,
of cars.
Right.
You know, they're cool.
And it has the word Porsche on it. And we like that. All right, Estevez Breton, tell us about the T's. Oh, yeah, you know, Jerry and I had a double breakdown this past week in cars. We broke down. Has this ever happened to you? I'm in the 70 911T on the PCH. He's in his 1975 914.
Oh, is that yellow one I saw?
The yellow one with
the
3,000
six, right?
original miles. We both broke down in the same spot while we were driving. I turn around. He's not there. I go to turn around. I go, what happened? He goes, car's dead. I pull my car up next to his. My car went dead. As if there were some sort of alien magnetic field
like
that shut us down.
Old people dying
right.
within a day of each
it
other.
Misery loves company.
It was right in front of a sober recovery house. So we had to push the cars into the spots.
Oh,
and then the guys came out and said, you can't be here. And we got we really have no choice. We'll start shooting heroin to come
who
in. Just
tells
we've got
Jerry
to move, but,
Seinfeld, you can't be here.
Tell me that story. Tell that. That was a great story.
What's that?
About the VIP parking?
Yes.
Yes. And you told me that Jerry went to park in the VIP parking, and the lady said, this is for VIPs. And he goes, yes, I'm Jerry Seinfeld. She said, this is for VIPs.
That's hysterical.
She didn't recognize him.
It's very funny.
But what – I mean, it was so crazy. So they're asking what went wrong. You know, this is why I drive a new car for a week, is to find the things that are going wrong. With the 911T, it was batteries and starter.
Okay.
So the batteries were dying and the starter
but
was going.
But once it was already running,
you know what?
You, when did it die or did you shut it off and it wouldn't start?
No, no.
Again?
It would not start again.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I turned it off. I went to start it. The engine was hot. The starter was hot. And that was stopped it from working.
Right.
The batteries are low. So
if
that,
it had sat for another hour, did it start again later?
It did not. No. We were able to, after an hour, we were able to push start it.
Okay.
And I drove it to Bill's and then it died there too.
Oh,
so,
no.
But I would rather wait for the truck
at
Bill's.
Yeah.
And Bill, by the way, Bill is the proprietor of the Malibu Kitchen. Saw it on the Instagram feed. You can see all this stuff on my Instagram
like
page.
Promotion. He's going to have to change the name of that place to Bill's. We just keep calling it Bill's. I feel like we're doing him an injustice.
A minute after I post, he shows up in his Range Rover with bagels and coffee
God
and cream. He delivers it right to
he's
us.
He's a saint.
He is an
they
all-star.
They call him the sandwich Nazi, but in fact, he's more like the sandwich
and
saint.
He brought fruit. And I was flagging at that point. I hadn't eaten breakfast, and I had been standing in the sun. That was that 106-degree day,
oh.
And it really saved my life. Bill, we
and
love
Bill.
You. So, and Jerry's car, we think it's the fuel pump. But his just he stopped at the red light and it just never went.
It's amazing it doesn't piss fluid every time you turn the key.
He'll be in over 100 grand before you know.
Yeah, in a 914.
That's what happens with these cars that sit. Yeah. These cars that aren't driven,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
you know, my car is getting better and better the more I'm driving it.
I just brought my Mustang to Las Vegas for a YouTuber project car challenge at the racetrack. And there were 5 cars in the challenge, and my Mustang was the only car that didn't have his hood up throughout the day.
Yeah, yeah. I thought I saw it go up with it set up.
No, no. The smoke?
Yeah.
That was Rob Ferretti's Corvette, which caught fire.
That's
my
hilarious.
Mustang was.
It caught fire?
It caught fire.
Real fire. Burned to a crisp?
No, not burned to the ground, but 100% flames engine fire.
All right. M. Fingleton 717 wants an update on the Zuckerman Speedster. Now, Zuckerman was in an accident in his 58 Speedster. Hit a van
you
full
have
of
cause ca- to sue.
He hit a van full of cats.
A van full
with,
off.
With two hippies. Yeah.
I swear to God, a very nice stoned hippie guy with bleary red eyes and a Star Trek T-shirt, and two large hippie women in peasant skirts.
No.
And I asked them, "How are you?" And they said, "We're fine, but the cats are upset." What are you saying to me? And yes, we have 10 rescue cats in a van. And so I did get a check from my insurance company. The first check for the initial repairs, $107,000.
The budget for this, right? Well, not the budget. The damage is $179,000, right?
Probably by the time they do the supplements and finish.
So is Will Hoyt working on it right now?
No, it's glacial.
It's
glacial.
It's just sitting in the lot.
2 years to fix that car.
Two angry years, and I just said, "Dude, I'm going to take some Key Man life insurance out on you, Will Hoyt, because this is taking a long. It's going to take a long ass time." That bastard, and I love him, but that bastard has 3 of my cars right now.
Unbelievable.
The problem with owning a Porsche is that the people that can work on them well have a backlog like you wouldn't believe. My friends at BBI Autosport, that they set up my Mustang. I mean, my Mustang is the worst car in this shop in a dozen years. But they're going to be doing the engine work on my Porsche, which is basic stuff. But I have an appointment now for February.
Worse than your HMO doctor.
Yeah.
And you know what he said to me? Well, on another car we were doing, he says, "I didn't know it would take this long." I said, "You've been doing this for 50 years. When do you know how long it takes to do it?"
All right, here we go. I just caught drive and was blown away by the DC drivetrains. What is the DC drivetrains? That's in Drive. Loved that Rimac Concept 1.
Yeah, so there's an episode
this
on...
This is from Zoot Salures.
Thank you, Zoot.
Awesome.
It's spelled... Have you heard Rimac? But it's
Rimac.
Actually pronounced Rimac.
Rimac, okay.
It's Croatian. It's an electric supercar, and they are doing some... it's the thing that Richard Hammond crashed.
That is the one he crashed in.
Yeah, we were actually supposed to
do... So there are a few of those.
There were 2. We were supposed to do a film with one.
Right.
Richard Hammond crashed it.
Yep.
So they had to go to Croatia and do like a thing at the factory without actually driving it.
Okay.
But they did drive it. No, they ended up driving it later. But
and what did you think of it?
I didn't drive it.
Oh,
I can't tell you. I've never seen it in person. That was one of the segments that I was not involved in. For my part in that show, I drove the NSX, the new NSX, and I loved it.
Really?
Loved.
Yeah, I like that car too.
It's
I enjoyed it.
It's a great looking car.
Dude, for the money, it's great.
It is so fast, and this car has, you know, the problem with most mid-engine cars, whether you're talking about a Ferrari, a Lamborghini, the Audi R8, the McLarens, is when you really, really start to go really fast. Undulating road and uneven tarmac, the front end can get a little pushy and floaty and unsure. And that's just sort of the way of the mid-engine car. What the NSX has with its electric motors, you know, it's mid-engine in the back. It has an electric motor at each front wheel. And each of those electric motors can do its own thing. So it has the stickiest front end of any mid-engine car I've ever driven at any price. And I grant that I drove a 918 for 5 minutes and I haven't pushed it to its limit. But for 190 grand loaded, this car is a value for sure. It's extraordinarily fast. And very, very close.
Have you been in that new Ford GT?
No, I have not. I've been in the presence of one. And the consensus I have heard from people who've driven them is that it seems like a great racetrack car, but a less than ideal road car. Whereas the old GT, the 04-06 car, is a spectacular road car. And was not a very good race car.
Hmm.
So I think if you go into it with that mindset, then you will. I was at the track when Chris Harris was reviewing it, and while I was doing the NSX at the same time, and it was insanely fast. Chris Harris was like, I mean, he was seeing, I think he saw 170 something on the back straight of VIR, wow. Which is really
fast.
Yeah,
that is really fast. Because we were getting up to 163.
A Turbo S or something?
No, in a GT3 RS.
Yeah. No, this is
that's
extraordinary,
nuts.
The speed you can carry.
All right, let's go deep in. You know what I like about Matt Farah is he can answer all car questions, and he can talk about anything cars.
Yeah, I mean, mesmerized.
So CYKBC on Instagram. By the way, these questions are all coming in on Instagram. That's really the only thing I check and like to be a part of, so if you want to talk to me there. Here's what his question is.
Nerd session.
Wheel manufacturers from Japan, USA, Germany, Italy, etc. All forged wheels are not created equal.
Truth.
Look at the detail work wheels put into their assembly. What does he mean by that? And there's no question here.
I think
Fuchs, BBS, Volk, Oz, HRE, Forgeline, etc.
I don't think there's
Where's your question? There's no question.
I think he
But he wants us to discuss.
I think he would like us to discuss different wheel manufacturers. So when you
why
I don't know. Here's the one thing with buying wheels: is just don't go cheap. You know, don't buy that eBay crap. Don't buy the Chinese stuff. It can, especially if you literally. Really,
it's a good rule for life, by the way. Don't buy the Chinese stuff.
Well, because you can get HREs and BBSs are really expensive, and the wording of his question is weird. But Work is actually a wheel company,
right?
The stuff from Germany, the TÜV, German TUV. They have standards that are much stricter than ours. So if you find a TUV-approved wheel, then it has passed fairly rigorous testing, which is required in Germany. As a matter of fact, I was just in Germany, and I rented a Audi S7 from a company called Sixt, and Hannah curbed a wheel. And because I rented the
Hannah's
car,
the girlfriend.
My girlfriend, and I told her I was going to throw her under the bus for this because she curbed the wheel. So
she's not listening.
Because the wheel had to be repaired to TÜV standards,
yes.
That little bit of curb rash cost me 1,200 euros.
TUV equals FUK.
Yeah.
So are any of these wheels at Ready Rims for rent? Can we rent this shit?
If you're doing your first track day, I recommend renting rims.
All right. Joshy Perot, and then we're going to get out of here. He's got a question. Let's talk Fords. I'm a former 5-liter guy since 1990, but now an air-cooled guy and never going back. The Fox bodies seem to be creeping up a few years, but now seem flat. Do you see them ever increasing in the market? And how do you feel your modified notchback stacks up to a stock 911 3.2 of the same
interesting
vintage?
Question.
Tiffany Stone, 3 thumbs up.
When is the show going up? Airing.
Which show?
The one we're recording now.
This will go up next week, a couple days.
Well, just because I want to
We're recording
answer...
on Friday. It'll be up this Wednesday.
Okay, I just want to... Because to answer the gentleman's question, I have to give away something that is coming out on Monday. So no problem.
So there we go.
So Fox bodies, you know, they were worth dirt, and now they're worth slightly more than dirt.
Mm-hmm. Dirt plus.
There was a lot of them, you know, and if you buy a good one, you can drive it a little bit and have fun, and your money is safe. But you're talking about not a huge amount of money. You know, I had someone come up to me yesterday and ask about 240s. So, you know, I bought a stock 240. It's my money. I said, you bought it for $7,000. I mean, how low can it go?
Right.
You're within FDIC limits here, right?
So, and I'm not trying to be, you know, condescending towards people who are buying cheaper cars, but I'm just saying that if you wanted to invest $8,000 in something, you could probably do better than buying a Fox body.
Yeah, Bitcoin might be more
remember
your speed.
I got that Fox body in the garage.
I do remember 89. That. Yeah.
Well,
do you still have that?
No, I had two. I purchased, or I should say, I traded and got two cars that had not been driven in 25 years. One was an 89 911.
Okay.
That took me almost a year to get it drivable again, the turbo. But there was a 93 Fox body Mustang Cobra.
Oh, those are great. Those will be worth some money.
And
Cobras are good.
And it was a 2,000-mile car. And all we had to do was put in gas, oil, and a new battery. And that sucker fired right up.
Yeah.
And it was totally fun. And I traded that to
that
Ray
was cool.
J as a part trade on a.
I remember
on
that.
On that Target. But it was. I thought it was cool as
shit. A 93 Cobra or a 93 Cobra R if it's nice, is an investment
the
grade
Cobra
car.
R
the Cobra
is
R
really,
is very rare.
Is a very rare car. The Cobra, I think the value I got for that car was somewhere in the 30s.
That's, yeah, a Cobra is worth real money, and a Cobra R is very, I think they made 50 Cobra R's in 93.
And it was fun. It sounded great. Yeah. It slid around every corner. It had a very comfortable Barca Lounger seat.
Yeah.
It had everything you could want.
Yeah.
A Barca Lounger seat.
My Fox body makes me feel like I'm in high school, and I just took it to this track day and beat the shit out of it all day. Justin Bell, my friend Justin Bell, came out. He drove it. Mm-hmm. He loved it. So to answer the second half of his question, how would it compare to, I think he said, a Carrera of the same year? I don't have that comparison. What I do have is same racetrack, same day, same driver, me. Porsche 911, 991 GT3. Steel brakes, P0 tires on the GT3.
Yep.
My Fox body... In the GT3, I ran a 57.1 lap. In my car, I ran a 55.8.
Come on.
Just saying. Same driver, same day.
How much would you loaded the deck on that one.
I did not.
But
I
you're very not. Familiar with your, obviously.
It's my car. It's your car. Right, my car. And in the GT, and my best lap time occurred in my fourth session in my car.
Wow.
Whereas I only got one session in the GT3. So I'm not saying.
But it still is a remarkable.
I'm not trying to say that my car is faster than a GT3 because I don't think it is.
But
what I am saying is.
I know it's not.
What I am saying is it's in the same league performance.
Yeah, which is impressive.
It's not. Justin
this gets back
Bell,
to the perfect show for you. Build it or buy it.
Justin Bell was, I was a little faster in my own car than Justin was in my car. Justin was a little faster in the GT3 than I was in the GT3.
Okay,
that gives you some pretty good data points.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know if there's a bigger story there, but my Mustang
there
is fast.
But we're
going
to have
well.
To save it for another episode of Spike's Car Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Matt Farah. His show is Drive. You got to check it out on NBC Sports and find him
on YouTube.
And the Smoking Tire. He's great. You're going to love him. And, of course, Zuckerman, if you've been injured in in an accident,
or
if you fell
on
a banana peel or hurt on a bike, you call Paul Zuckerman. He'll get you the money. See you next week on Spike's Car Radio.
Thanks for listening to Spike's Car Radio. Download new episodes every Wednesday on the Podcast One app or subscribe now at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.